You're about to hear the 100th episode of the Spartan Up podcast. But first, let's talk about our mission to rip people off the couch. Life is a gift, and we don't want you to waste it. We need your help growing the Spartan Revolution. We're not asking for money, but there are three things we'd like you to do. One, we'd like you to click on the subscribe button on iTunes or YouTube, wherever you listen. Two, tell 10 friends about the show. And three, get moving. This is our 100th episode for Spartan Up. Big deal. I mean, we started about a year ago. We probably got, I don't know how many episodes in the can, but we've been running all over the world filming people to try to find out what are the attributes that make somebody successful. How can we become more successful? And when I reflect back, I think, who was that great interview? Which one really changed me? And I think it was Kareem Jude. And look, my whole life I've been fascinated by people from Eastern Europe or anybody that fights for milk to get through their day. And it's an attribute that I try to push on to anybody I come in contact with, and I try to teach myself. How do I wake up every morning and fight for milk? I heard this great story about a great samurai while I was in Japan who became a great samurai just by changing his mindset. And what he would do is every night when he went to sleep, he would visualize everything he owned, everything he was connected to, burning and disappearing. So that when he woke up, anything he came in contact with, his family, his possessions, that was brand new. He was excited about it because it was stuff he didn't have as of last night. He burned it. And so when you look at the episode, Kareem Jude, he's from Lebanon. He had everything. He's a young 20-year-old. He gets kidnapped, tortured, beaten. They take everything of his. Well, I don't want to tell you too much. You got to tune in. You got to watch the episode. But here's a guy that transformed himself not once but twice, and transformed me, and I think he'll transform you.
I was kidnapped and tortured. I went through 7 interrogations. Each group of interrogators had its own way of torturing me. Some of them, to give you an idea, if you are there, some of them hang me upside down and whip me until I bled profusely. Right. Others put electric shock on a stair like this, electric shock. Some had slap, punch, kick me and stomp their feet on my body. Others put sharp instrument on my nose, on my ears, on my neck, on my shoulder.
And,
on my
knee. And what was their goal?
Trying to find where is my money, and most important, what I know about the Christian, because I'm a Christian, and they are Syrian against them. Where is the arms, and where are who getting the money and fund and so on. I was never involved in any war. Actually, I was against the war, and kept telling people, this is not our war, we should not get involved.
And you and your answers to these guys as they were torturing you?
Right. All my life, the best way is to tell the truth, what you
right.
know.
Right. And so how did you escape?
One of my employees, at that time I had 1,265 employees in Lebanon. One of my employees used to be one of those lazy but nice guys. Used to come to me and say, boss, my daughter is sick, I need some milk. Or my wife had to go to the doctor. I used to give him, at that time,
help out.
$50, $20, whatever it is he requested. That was what he requested. He asked in a nice way, and I never felt threatened by him because, you know, he's a nice guy, but, you know. And when I was kidnapped, getting from one interrogation to another, after 7 interrogations, I was going to the 8th interrogation. Again, during that time, I didn't see anything. Never took off my, even during the night, never slept actually. I have the...
Over your eyes?
My eyes have...
Closed.
And my hand behind me. The only time that is my hand when I had to go to the bathroom. But of course, I never ate anything or slept all the time, just water. So when going to the 8th, I heard his voice. His name is Hasib.
The guy you had been helping?
Yeah.
Right.
He's Palestinian. So he asked me, he said, no, not to my boss. That's what I heard him saying.
Right.
I said, Hasib, is it you? He said, yes. He said, can you help me? He said, what I can do to help you? So I gave him 3 names, let them know, because nobody knew I was there.
Right.
2 hours later, they told me that I was lucky they didn't find anything on me. They have ordered to release me. But this is 3 conditions. I had to sign everything I owned in Lebanon to them. I have to leave Lebanon immediately and not talk about it. So they put me on the first plane out of Beirut with only the dirty clothes and blood stain.
From the interrogation?
Yeah, and put me on the first plane. They took everything. They didn't even let me take my address book. We didn't have phone like now. My address book, nothing. Not clothes, anything. Just a passport, the American Express, and the dirty clothes. And they kept the American Express because I had to pay the airline ticket.
Right.
So I paid the airline ticket with American Express. As soon as I step on the plane, I collapsed. I woke up in a hospital near Geneva with tube all over my body. My father, one thing I remember clearly, one day we were talking about the war. That was, 45. War is over. And I said to Dad, you said the war is over. How come there still being innocent people being killed? He hugged me and told me, Sonny, in the history of man, there has never been justice in the world. Mm-hmm. And they will never ever be. But what you and I can do is to help reduce other people's suffering and not to add to this suffering.
Right.
In that word, I'm trying to translate from Lebanese to America.
Yeah.
In that word. And I think that's what most influenced me, what I'm doing. To be able to start a foundation at age 26, two foundations, I had to make money. How can I make money
if I'm not successful? Right. Focus on making money. Then you can help others.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Making money the honest way. That's important.
Yeah.
You can find the complete interview with Kareem Jood at spartan.com/051. We also have show notes and lessons for every episode. So, Dr. Dell, I think I know who it's going to be, but who's your favorite Spartan Up episode so far?
It's going to be somewhat biased, my favorite Spartan interview, and there have been so many that I think I've taken so much from. It's actually a really difficult one, but I'm going to be quite biased towards a British gentleman that I think was just really exciting for us to go and interview, Sir Ranulph Fiennes, described as the world's greatest living explorer, and we were lucky enough to go to his house to interview him there, and just ask him directly how you get the title of being the world's greatest living explorer. You know, this is one of the most accomplished explorers still alive today. Am I allowed to say he's still alive today? Of course he is. And he was so incredibly humble, so incredibly giving, and so incredibly funny. I think that was the thing that really sidelined me, was the fact that he was so dry with his humour. And just very open and honest about what it really took behind the scenes to travel across the whole of Antarctica. And was just very giving and very open about the work that Ginny Fiennes, his wife, put in, who was the world's, the first woman to win the Polar Medal. So I just found I took a lot of inspiration and a lot back from being able to approach somebody who is so incredibly accomplished. So he is my very favourite. Ron, how did you gain the title of the world's greatest living explorer?
The Guinness Book of Records in 1984 decided to categorise their sort of greatest in music and sport and one or two other strange categories, like who walked barefoot for 100 yards on red-hot coals. And I got it because at that time I had the greatest number of world records at exploration and was still alive. I suppose the Brits, being on a little tiny island, sort of want to get out. And they, for 300 years, tried to be first to get to the North Pole and to get further north than anyone else. And great numbers of them and their ships died in nasty circumstances and scurvy and icebergs and all that. More than any other nation, they had deaths, so they deserved to be first in the North Pole. But in 1910, an American, Admiral Peary, claimed to be first in the North Pole, so the Brits lost the North Pole. South Pole, which came later, they sent Scott, who did the first ever penetration. Captain Cook had discovered the edge of it and so on. And so they rather thought that, and Shackleton, that they should be first to the pole, which Shackleton very nearly was. But they were beaten by Norway. So my wife in 1972 decided that we ought to be the first to do both in the single journey without flying 1 meter of the 52,000 miles. So she, and gradually we got a group of international people from 9 countries who were prepared to work on this for 4 years with no pay. And eventually we got a ship, well, a nice strengthened ship. And by 1982, after 3 years of travel, we became the first people to cross both the Arctic and the Antarctic to reach both poles by surface travel. And nobody before or since has ever walked around, or rather travelled around the surface, not in the air, of Earth. More people have been on the moon. So we sort of didn't get first north, first south, but we did get first both.
And what makes somebody like yourself want to go and do something like that?
Well, in my case, my wife.
So who was the grittiest, you or her?
Oh, nobody was grittier than her. She wasn't very big, but she had very blue eyes, and I've seen big men fade, you know, when she's putting them in their place.
And that's Junie Fiennes, who was the first woman to ever win the Polar Medal, I believe.
Yep.
Go ahead and listen to all of Saran's interview, or watch it, at spartan.com/029. So, Colonel Nye, what's your favorite Spartan Up episode so far?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that, and it's kind of a tough question because we've done about 100 episodes now, and there are many of them that stand out. And, you know, from a guy with a military background, at least, it's, you know, the ones that stand out to me very quickly are, you know, General McChrystal and Mark Devine and Mark Owen and some of those kind of ones. I thought all those were great. And then we've got this whole other group, the entrepreneurs and the adventurers and stuff. But I got to tell you, of all the ones I've seen, I think the one that had the most impact on me was one of the most recent. Shannon Galpin, who's an author and wrote this book, Mountain to Mountain. But she runs this program, this charity, in Afghanistan. And she's a woman, obviously, who has taken her passion, her love of mountain biking, into Afghanistan. So as a guy who has spent a time or two in Afghanistan and understands the threats and kind of seen some of the hazards there, the way of life, and understands the culture at least as well as most Americans do, it totally kind of blows me away that this woman, or that anybody, but a woman specifically in Afghanistan, could take on this mission and to reach out to these young girls there and try to bring them something, a simple joy of riding a bicycle, of which she eloquently goes through and talks about that they're not allowed to do. Their culture doesn't allow that. And there's risk there. There's risk to her, and then there's risk to these girls. And yet somehow this thing is starting to move, right? She's starting to pedal her bicycle forward, if you will. And so it is fascinating to me. I think she said she's been there 20 times. I have flown into Kabul as a civilian just once. And I got to tell you, every pore in my body was on alert because most of the time when I went there, I was surrounded by hundreds of my best friends and they all had weapons. So you land in Afghanistan by yourself and then try to make your way around the country. You know, there's just risk, there's adventure, there's all kinds of things at play there. But then to actually reach out and try to create something and have to work within the system. And she talked about bribery and how that's the norm, and it is. And yet she has thankfully or luckily or just been able not to even get involved with that. So she is fighting so many different things at once that you just hear her talk, her passion, her drive, her dedication to these girls. It's just commendable. And again, of all the interviews we've done, I think this is one I'm probably going to remember the longest.
There's, you know, IEDs, there's roadside bombs, there's suicide bombs, there's the fact that these girls are getting rocks thrown at them, one of them's been run over by a motorcycle. I mean, they're literally risking their lives to ride a bike, but they also believe it's their right to ride a bike.
And so you're hoping that you can turn the country? I mean, that you're going to stay until it's turned?
I'm going to stay until the girls continue to ride, until the work that I've done. I've also worked in the women's prisons. I've built a school for the deaf and these other projects that I have been doing. I'm going to stay for as long as I can. You know, the worry is that the security will deteriorate. But then you take into account the young youth movement that's going on in Afghanistan, the activists, the artists, the athletes. They have the potential, if we continue to support them, that they could turn their country.
So you got the drug problem, you got poverty, you got a war going on, and you're trying to mountain bike.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was definitely the decision that here's a very interesting way through a bike that you can empower people. You know, it increases access to school, increases access to education, it reduces gender violence. And you see that all the time in other countries. Afghanistan is one of the few, other than Saudi Arabia, where women can't ride bikes. And so I was simply curious, one, to explore, because I'm a mountain biker and I love the mountains and it's an incredibly beautiful country. So I was curious on a selfish issue to just explore and see what it was like. But I was really curious about this gender barrier. How deep did it go? Was this from Taliban time or was it further back? Would there be any villager that I might meet that would allow his daughter to ride?
We'll be publishing our interview with Shannon Galpin on August 16th, so make sure you're subscribed on YouTube or iTunes, or just stop by our website, spartan.com/podcast, on August 16th or anytime after. So, Dr. Johnny, what's your favorite Spartan Up episode?
So, yeah, I had to think a lot about this. Some of the ones that resonated with me personally were the wrestlers, because that's my background, and really need to hear them talk with Joe and the back and forth. But also selfishly, I think I actually had three favorite interviews, and I'm going to tell you them combined because there's a common thread. And it was three authors. It was Tim Ferriss, AJ Jacobs, and Tucker Max. And I've always been fascinated by those three guys, especially the first two. And I'll explain why. The Tim Ferriss, he's into the hack. He's into finding the way to do things better, faster, bigger, stronger, whatever it is, but not just using conventional wisdom, but rather actual experience, like really testing things out and trying them out and seeing what works. And then communicating that to people. So he's kind of made himself a human experiment, which I find really, really fascinating. And I've been a fan of his work since the 4-Hour Work Week came out originally years and years ago, and actually I've used a lot of it in my life to great success, a lot of his theories.
We are here in San Francisco, Noe Valley, right, for Spartan Up Podcast with Tim Ferriss. For those of you that don't know who Tim Ferriss is, he is the 4-Hour guy. 4-Hour Body, right? 4-Hour Work Week, 4-Hour everything. You a big list guy? You pull out like a yellow pad?
I am a big list guy, and the problematic adjective there is big. So I like to just get a small piece of paper about that big or a small index card folded over so that I have a finite amount of space. And so I really try to narrow it down to one or two key things per day that I'm going to focus on. And usually my day is split. There's a great essay by Paul Graham, who founded Y Combinator. One of the founders of Y Combinator, which is a really innovative, I guess you could call it, venture incubator here in Silicon Valley. And he wrote an essay called The Makers Versus the Manager Schedule, and how if you're a maker, you have to block out 3 to 4 hour, say, periods of time that are uninterrupted. And I try to make the first half of my day the creative maker portion up until lunch, and then after that I can do kind of the half-hour calls, the hour-long meetings and so on for management. And I find breaking it up that way is
that's
very,
why,
very
that's
helpful.
Why I can only get you in the afternoon.
That's right.
In the morning you're being creative.
The second human experiment, but in a completely different way, is A.J. Jacobs. And whereas Tim Ferriss is trying to find better ways to do things, A.J. Jacobs is just doing things for the sake of experience. Like when he did the Year of Living Biblically. Just an incredible thought process and really a thought experiment. And so just a fascinating guy. Like I've read his books and always really found him entertaining, but it was really, really cool to get to see behind the scenes and see where he comes from.
We are here in New York for Spartan Up Podcast with AJ, a.k.a. the Human Guinea Pig.
Correct.
He also contributes to NPR, writer for Esquire, super author. And your big guinea pig moment was you were...
Well, probably my best known work was when I... it was called The Year of Living Biblically, and I followed all the rules of the Bible as literally as possible for a year. So, famous ones, Ten Commandments, love your neighbor, but also you can't shave the corners of your beard, so I had this huge, you know, I looked crazy. I spent a lot of time at airport security.
So, what'd you learn?
One thing was the idea of gratitude, because they make you say, you know, you have to say these thanks for everything in your life. And I took that literally. So I would press the elevator button. I'd be thankful the elevator came. I'd get in the elevator. I'd be thankful it didn't plummet to the basement. And it was weird, but it was also wonderful because you realize there are hundreds of things that go right every day that we totally take for granted. And we focus on the three or four that go wrong. And so it's been a radical shift in perspective. And that's just one of the many things that have made me.
And did that stick at all? Are you still doing a little bit of it?
Oh, yeah. It stuck a lot.
And then the third one, Tucker Max, I can't say that I thought I was going to be a fan. I've read some of his stuff. It wasn't really for me per se. I got that it was funny, you know, I hope they serve beer in hell, and, you know, kind of sexist frat boy kind of stuff. And he surprised me so much in the interview. He was such an intelligent, thoughtful, interesting guy. And what I realized is he also was doing a human experiment, but rather than himself being the subject, it was more poking and prodding other people, seeing how they'd react. Brilliant marketer, got him on the radar, and now he actually has a national audience that he can actually impart something a little more valuable than just sort of sexist frat boy humor. And but he's really actually using that to, certainly in the interview, came across a guy who's using that to good length.
For those of you who don't know, we are in they call this the Octagon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With Tucker Max.
Right, so I'm not a very good MMA fighter. I don't do it for money. I just train for fun. But I've actually learned an immense amount from MMA and Jiu-Jitsu. One of the first things actually that apply to business, that I've applied to sort of business and art, right? One of the very first things I remember when I walked into the first MMA, the first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class I took, my instructor told me, he said, you know, don't get nervous, don't get afraid. You're going to get submitted. Doesn't matter. There's no losing in here. In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, in training, there's only winning and learning. The only way to lose is to not train. And I was like, oh, that's fucking great. Like
winning and learning.
Winning and learning. And at first I was like, okay, that's a cool saying, but it didn't really connect. And then you get on the mat, right? And the first time you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's the most frustrating shit you've ever done in your life. You feel like you're sinking in quicksand because everything you do makes it worse, right? You don't know how to move, you don't know how to defend, and if you struggle, it just makes it worse. So it's like all your instincts are wrong, and you just get choked out, tapped out, just over and over and over and over, right? And if you're used to tying your identity to like success, then it's crippling and crushing. Right? And so at the end of the class, I was like, all right, so I guess I learned a lot today. Uh-huh. But like, I laugh about it, but it actually helped.
So when I say it's selfish too, I had mentioned that the wrestlers, it was because that resonated with me as a wrestler. And yet there's always part of me that's wanted to write. And I've written bits and pieces and blogged a bit and things like that. In fact, it's part of how I ended up on Joe's radar and ended up here at the podcast. But it really, those three guys really inspire me. And it was really to be able to be part of those interviews with them as far as doing the analysis, it really let me see behind the scenes a bit. And all three are butt guys I'll probably follow up with down the road because it's something I think I'd like to do more of. And so I found it very inspiring.
You can find all three of the authors that Johnny talks about on our website, along with several others like Stephen Pressfield. Just go to spartan.com/podcast. Or if you want to find each of the individual episodes directly, for Tim Ferriss, go to spartan.com/056. For A.J. Jacobs, spartan.com/081. For Tucker Max, spartan.com/064. What's your favorite interview in the Spartan Up podcast so far?
Although easy defaults would be the ones that focus on agriculture or the amazing kids that we've studied or phenomenal schools that we've seen. One that really resonates with me because of what I'm actually doing for work right now with my twin brother, with a company called Tactivate, is what Mark Devine had to say. He runs Seal Fit, and it was episode number 19 for the Spartan podcast. And it was just one of those ones where pretty much everything that comes out of that man's mouth is just a real gem of wisdom that has massive learning that can be kind of onion peeled away from it. From his focus on box breathing, which is something I've been trying to do, and when I do it, it's amazing how it settles even my mind and calms your soul. And then to talk about how easy isn't always better, and obviously from being around Joe and the whole Spartan culture and everything that we talk about here, that's something that we hear and learn again and again.
First of all,
you know, the most important lesson for mental toughness is to know your why. Like, why are you here? So I go around the room and say, why are you here? And you know, you would tell me, well, I'm here because I'm a father and I want to prove to my kids that they've got someone who's really strong who can be there for them in a crisis, and I want to be an example for them. And I'd look at you and I'd be like, I'll see you on Sunday. You know what I mean?
Right.
That is an important, that's a powerful why. And then I'll go and I'll see this, you know, like maybe 20-year-old, you know, tough looking SEAL candidate, and he's like, well, I'm here to prove how tough I am. And I'd be like, I'll probably see you in 3 hours, you know, walking off the grinder after you quit. And so knowing why and connecting, you know, that why, it's like back to, you know, what we're talking about in that nice hot sauna, hot tub over there.
Yeah, the SEAL fit sauna.
The SEAL fit sauna. You know, if you're super clear about why you're doing thing, then in every moment when the going gets tough, when you get kicked in the balls, you can say, you know what, this is okay because I know why I'm doing this and it's a worthy cause. Right? And that's kind of the first most important
people thing. I've seen quit our longer races. That's exactly why they quit, as they say, I don't know why I'm here.
Yeah, I forgot why.
Right.
Why
it doesn't mean any, whatever it is, and they lost their way in that moment.
Yeah.
They'll regret it later, but that's what happened.
Sure. I mean, you know, we have a saying, it's better to live a life of discipline than a lifetime of regret. And the discipline is in managing your mind.
You won't want to miss watching the Mark Divine interview. You can see the whole thing on our website, along with the SEAL Fit Onslaught, where they went after Joe and put him through a surprise workout. That's at spartan.com/019.
Tune in, spartanuppodcast.com. Learn more about some of the other shows we've done, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to another epic story of success. Get more at SpartanUpPodcast.com. The Spartan Up Podcast is brought to you by Spartan.
Isn't it time you found your true north? Sign up for Spartan X.